So this is the point where we really want to hear from everyone on the phone. Any questions that you have for any of the panelists that you heard from, whether it was about the legal and policy implications of what happened yesterday, or the amazing leaders from the Southwest, the Midwest, and the South who have been and are moving incredible work in their regions. It's an open floor for any questions folks may have.
Okay, so the first question is, have any university systems or colleges issued a statement of commitment to transgender students despite the actions of the federal government?
I'm not sure, but I would expect that they have. We know that 40% of K-12 districts in the country already have policies that protect transgender students, and many, many universities and colleges do. They've often led the way on this, thanks in part to great organizing by trans students and allies on their campuses. So I haven't been tracking this with everything else happening, but yeah. And if they haven't, if your institution hasn't, ask them to do it. That's a great idea, and I think can send a really important message to counter the terrible message of exclusion that the presidential administration has just sent.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just flagging, I think that the NCAA, this is Sasha, by the way, has had an inclusive policy for many years, along with many, many universities. And one school that has come out, this information just happened yesterday. This brief withdrawal of guidance just happened yesterday. So, we're hopefully expecting many more statements reaffirming their commitment to inclusivity. But one positive sign is that the Los Angeles School District has made an affirmative statement recently. So that was positive. But we're expecting a lot more. More and more states have made statements as well. Recently, the New York Attorney General, issued a statement clarifying that they'll continue to protect transgender people. And just this morning, I was in Sacramento, and the LGBTQ caucus in California issued, a statement expressing their support as well. So we're hopefully see a lot more of that. But yeah, it'd be great if folks, on the ground could be contacting their folks to make those kinds of statements to reassure, the folks in the area that we're standing behind them.
Yeah, and I would also just mention Campus Pride, I believe, is starting to track which universities are making voluntary statements in support of trans students.
Okay, our next question, does allowing a trans student to use a single stall bathroom or the teacher's restroom still constitute discrimination?
Yes, that is definitely discrimination. Now, some students, transgender or non-binary or any student, might want to use a single-user restroom, might prefer to have that additional privacy. And we think that any student should be able to have that if that's what they want. But we often see schools insisting that a transgender student has to use a single user restroom segregated away from everybody else, and that is absolutely discriminatory and violates the law.
Okay. Should we infer from the federal government or that the federal government will defend school districts and states that choose not to protect trans students?
I mean, that's not really what they do. I mean, that would be very troubling. I mean, I suppose you could imagine some worst case scenarios, but the Department of Education and the Department of Justice exist to enforce civil rights laws and to enforce them against states and school districts that violate the laws. There's not really any precedent for them to step in on the side of the organization that is discriminating. That would be a new low. But I suppose I should stop being surprised by anything that this administration does. So I'll leave it at that.
And it seems like this attendee knows that we've done a lot of work in California specifically in the past. So they're wondering, how does this decision impact existing laws here?
It doesn't, at least for now. This decision by the Trump administration to roll back the Obama administration's guidance about what Title IX means only has to do with federal law, Title IX specifically, but that doesn't touch or have anything to do with state non-discrimination laws. So first of all, it doesn't actually change what Title IX means, as we've said. Title IX still prohibits discrimination against transgender students across the country, and you know, we believe very strongly that that's what the law means, and we're going to go to court as many times as it takes to make sure that that is enforced. But also, 15 states have explicit laws at the state level making clear that discrimination against transgender students is against the law, and not to mention hundreds now of school districts, maybe thousands across the country, that have adopted their own inclusive non-discrimination policies. So all of those are untouched by this decision. And those students who live in places that have those kinds of laws or policies in place should continue to have the protection of those policies.
And can I just add, yes, I mean, all that is definitely true. However, we just know, right, that what the Trump administration did has basically opened up an opportunity for school districts who want to act badly and who want to treat trans students badly to do so, right? So we absolutely are protected from discrimination under the law across the country. And we also know what we could see and what student people were already experiencing on the ground, right? Which is why this conversation that is both about the legal and policy strategies we need to move and the grassroots strategies that folks on the ground throughout the country have already been moving to keep each other safe is super critical.
Great. So this refers to our earlier question about schools and colleges that have issued statements or may not have. They would like some advice on maybe crafting one of those statements. What would a good statement, how would a good statement read to support transgender students?
Jenna? I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's probably a very long answer. And so what we can do is make sure to share out some thoughts around that. I mean, unless Alona has.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main point for me of such a statement would be just to show their support for the students currently on their campus, mm-hmm. or thinking about coming there, to just make a statement that they are committed to being an inclusive space, and that transgender and gender nonconforming students are welcome, and that they're not, you know, similar to the sanctuary cities that we've seen over the last month or two, you know, coming out and making the statement that they're gonna committed to being a safe place for vulnerable communities.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say that statements without action are pretty meaningless. So we would wanna see the universities back up their statements by creating gender inclusive restrooms and just gender inclusive spaces throughout the campus.
And that's a really good question. I think we can get together with our partners, GSA Network, and think about some resources we could share out to folks.
Right. So this is a big question. How would a positive outcome to the Gavin Grimm case impact the rescinding of these protections?
The Supreme Court is obviously the last word on what the law means. For those of you, I mean, probably everybody knows about the Gavin Grimm case, but for those of you who might not, Gavin is a high school student, a transgender boy in Virginia, and he sued his school district because they after he had already been out and living as a boy and known as a boy by everyone at his school, his school initially allowed him to use the boys' restroom, and there were no problems with that. But then some parents in the community learned about this and started to complain, and then the school district, the school board came in and overruled his actual school's decision and said that no, from now on, he had to either use the girls' restroom or a single-user restroom that they converted from a janitor's closet that only he was allowed to use. And this was obviously incredibly harmful and stigmatizing, and so he sued with the help of the ACLU. He won an injunction against the school, but the school district has appealed that to the United States Supreme Court, and they're going to be hearing arguments next month, at the end of March, and this decision it's hard to say exactly what the decision will be. It could go a number of different ways. It is possible that it could decide what Title IX means and clarify whether Title IX does in fact protect transgender students. You know, and we think if they do that, they will agree with the vast, vast majority of other courts that have already looked at this issue and already said that Title IX does protect transgender students. It's possible that they could rule against us on that, although, again, I think that's really unlikely. And there's also a variety of options by which they could avoid deciding the issue at all for now. So whatever they do, it will certainly take precedence over any decision that the Trump administration makes, because again, the Trump administration can't decide what the law is. They're just telling us their opinion about what it means, or actually declining to state an opinion about what the law means. And the Supreme Court has the opportunity to tell us once and for all what the law means.
So we have a good question for our organizers and our panelists. So this attendee is from California, and they're asking, how can communities that may have more protections in place show up in solidarity with communities that may be more at risk? So Mickey, Lorraine, Anthony, if you have any thoughts, please share. And Violet too, please share.
So this is Mickey. I would say that, you know, solidarity is an action. It is a verb. And so being transparent and showing if there was a process to gaining those protections and actually sharing that and working with those folks who do not currently have those protections is one step. And I would also say that some places that have established, I like the metaphor that Ilona used about the sanctuary cities, because that is linked to this. Some methods that folks have been using the platform that is established by places that have that protection to then talk about places that need that protection extended, right? So it's like a light that shines out and then touches all these other places, but it has to start from a particular place. And so that's a platform to build off of, that is a platform to share the light, and that's how you move that.
I also think to add on to that, online organizing is a thing. You know, you can definitely utilize online online platforms to organize, or just strategize with other people. Like this idea about when you were bringing up sanctuary cities, we're currently thinking about how can we expand sanctuary. How do we expand what that means for people, and how does it encompass different marginalized folks? And so, like, being able to have, like, spaces like this where we can sit and have, like, an incubator for ideas and planning on how we can organize in our communities, how can we take back different skills. Also, like, this makes me think, like, this, what Chris was saying earlier, this isn't anything new, right? This has been happening for a long time, and also it's been happening very localized. in the South. And so being able to like speak to people from in the South and being able to strategize with them and use those tools to figure out what liberation could look like for us, what safety could look like for us. If you can't travel there, using online tools for that could be a challenge.
Also, I would like to say, like if you have like a space or something like that, like volunteering your space, like giving your space to a group of young folks who are like needing and seeking that space, making time for them, you know, like someone else, like strategizing with them. I know often I'd be going to protests, like you have like people of color who are like in the back, and then like you have our white allies who kind of stand in front of them and be like kind of like add like the extra layer of like support or the extra layer of like defense between like us and like law enforcement. So like using like their their privilege or their spaces and things like that, but and letting people access that, you know, letting people who are not as letting current trans youth access their space, you know.
Great, thank you all. And I actually have another question for the organizers, and it's actually very similar to what Anthony was just speaking to in the previous question. But you know, I know that for myself, as someone who is no longer a youth, and in this moment, really wanting to know what it is that adults, that older folks can do in this moment, from where you're sitting as organizers, as young leaders in the movement. Like if you were able to say to adults in your region or across the country, this is what I need you to do, you know?
And let's see if Violet has anything to share specifically about that first.
So I guess one thing I would have to say to the adult organizers is thank you for all the support and everything, but also like give space for some of the youth to speak on their behalf and on their experiences that are very real and lived. I find far too often that when I'm in spaces with adult organizers in my area or region, that they tend to like navigate and just like control the conversation, and I don't really get to put my two cents in as far as my experience or what I feel needs to be done. So then the issues that they're working on are being actively or are actively working for them, but not so much on the behalf of trans youth. So I think it's taking back the dynamic for what works for your age group versus the youth, and just taking that into consideration when approaching this work.
I guess I can add, I recently graduated from a college where I transitioned in college and I had a very difficult time just getting acclimated. And like Violet was saying earlier, I did experience a lot of bullying and discrimination from actually the staff and faculty as opposed to the students themselves. And I think that in New Orleans is a beautiful community, a rich community of Black queer folks, right, who were able to show up for me and leverage their privilege and their power in certain ways in order to show up and take up space that I could not actually take up myself, and to speak up for me when times kids sometimes, like we sometimes, there's sometimes we just can't speak up, right? Sometimes it's the fear is overwhelming, or sometimes we don't have the vocabulary, or sometimes we don't have the energy. And so having folks and having a chosen family and community that could pick up that mantle for me, right, and take up that space for me was very beneficial and helpful. But also, like Violet was saying, also creating space to allow the young trans people to be able to speak on their own behalf when they feel like they can. And not forcing people to play this game, right? That we are doing this, it's like this is serious, we're doing this to live in our truths, and that this is not a game. And so for adults who really want to take this seriously, to understand that and to allow us to call the shots, but showing up for how we need them to.
And this is Nikki. The role of allies has never really changed. It is to educate yourself on why this is such a life or death issue, because it is much broader than bullying. It is much broader than what we make it out to be in terms of like harassment. It is about the school to prison pipeline. It is about the use of the state to tell our youth like how they can live their lives. And so I think the role of the allies, especially adult allies, has been the same, is to educate yourself and to leverage resources and to leverage privilege in the name of trans youth, with trans youth. It is to give platform, and it is to wrangle the other adults so that they understand the depth of the issue, so that they understand the urgency of leveraging platform and privilege and resources. That's the role, and it hasn't changed.
Can I end? So I'm not an organizer, and I'm also not a youth, but in our experience at GSA Network, we want to make sure that youth are involved at every level of decision-making for whatever we're doing to protect trans youth. Our role is to really uplift youth and empower youth to take on that leadership role. Otherwise, it's a waste of resources if we're doing something that is not meaningful or needed or wanted by the youth that we work alongside.
Something that I want to add real quick is just like if you are like an adult ally or an adult like someone like that, like doing the work, like not to tokenize the youth and to make sure like this their story, and like they have like that story has been like something that's been developing for years, and every time like they lay their story out on the line, they're often giving a part of them that they can actually add back, you know? So like be able to like to cherish that and like appreciate what they do give for you, you know, and not like I said, not tokenize. And if there is like cases in which they're like you can put like some money in some of the young people's pockets who like come up there in your organizations and like do speak for y'all and do things like that, that'll be like a huge plus, you know, because some of them are like, some of us are like, you know, we need it. So yeah, that'll be like my little two cents. Like, don't tokenize, and if you can, like, pass the coins on. You know, if you want their stories, then like, it's only legit that you give them, you show them that you appreciate their story, appreciate their time. We live in a capitalist society. Let's use that for something good for once.
Pass the coins.
And so we'll take this a little bit further. There are some parents who are attending the town hall right now, and they are wondering, you know, in what ways can they support their children who or youth who may be in at-risk areas, and they may not also have that support that they need as well.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, love your youth. Make sure that your youth know that they are loved and they're supported by you. And then there are some really great organizations that you can reach out to connect with other parents of trans youth. There's our Family Coalition in San Francisco. There's PFLAG chapters throughout the country. And then there's some really great parent organizing going on in various regions, and I think we can get those resources out to folks a little bit later.
Gender Spectrum, I think.
Gender Spectrum is another great resource.
And finally,
another great resource would be Trans Truth Council, or just the network itself. They have a wonderful stories of families and trans youth who tell about their experience and how they get through their difficulties in life and how society, how they navigate through society and how they're able to just make it through the day and live as, you know, a normal family, not just like the family with the trans kid, but, you know, that they're just like anybody else. So I definitely check out that resource, Trans Truth, the collaboration between Transgender Law Center and GSA Network.
And I would also just add, you know, I just think, you know, as a transgender person myself, like the importance of having community and being connected to folks has always been true and is even more so in this moment. So I would also encourage folks to reach out to any of the organizations on this call, which are really representing pretty much every region of the country, or any of the national organizations who could help you connect to local groups.
We need each other.
And I want to. I just wanted to add that I second what Chris mentioned. I know that for my own parents, a key part of their support of me has been to talk to other parents and gather with them. And I think that is also in line with the political values that Song holds and the power of gathering and speaking our truth. Because that creates the space for action, that creates the space for protection, that creates the space to actually shift things.
Totally, I agree. Another thing I was thinking about is like in like your communities, like for adults, like I know someone was saying like create, like communicate with other like parents in your community and things like that. So like the parents like have like designated like safety spots for like the youth in like each community on some stuff. Like if your child is like identified as being queer or trans, something like that, and like you in a neighborhood like designate safety spots for like young folks in the community, you know, when they come to those areas. And that's something that just popped to my mind, I was just saying. So yeah, I want to add that little piece.
And one more thing I would like to add is social media can be a great tool and resource to reach out to other trans families or trans youth and their families, and just to find different people throughout the nation and share experiences. So I just wanted to add that.
Great. So we have about 2 minutes left. So we'll do some closing.
Yes, so thank you so much to all of our panelists and for our partner at GSA Network and TLC staff for making this call happen. Thank you to everyone who is on this call right now. You know, we know that this is a hard moment. We also know that we have been there before. So we just want to send out so much love and strength to everyone on this call and across the country. You know, we will keep fighting and we will win. Thank you.